Now.
Yes, sir. Welcome to episode 5 of the Sports Bible.
I'm your host, Jackson, with my co-host, Michael. Like we do every episode, start off kicking off with some Laurier Brantford news, catch you caught up with sports around Brantford. This week, upcoming on November 4th, is the tryouts for soccer, a second tryout of the Brantford Laurier soccer team. Hopefully, we can see more people out. We had a good show, 2 weeks ago with about, let's say, about 30.
Yeah, 30 people.
Which is surprising for a new team coming up in a rebuild stage. So it was glad to see a lot of people out there. And this past Saturday was provincials for the Laurier Brantford cross country team, where we saw the women's team qualify for nationals as they made a great push for second. Obviously they didn't get second, but a solid bronze medal at provincials, which sends them to their second straight nationals. And we saw myself making it for the boys team as an individual runner, placing 17th in provincials.
It's great that, especially after a year, you know, of no sports, you know, Laurier Brantford really like returned to form, especially with the girls getting that back to back. I know that's definitely not easy. So a big congrats to them. And then obviously a big congrats to the host, Jackson, for working hard, really helping the program move forward. How was the race for you? Because I know it must have been a lot.
Yeah, it was obviously a rainy day, muddy, slippery. Doesn't help that the girls' team goes first and kind of go through the course and rip it up for us. And then we have to go in there and it's all muddy, it's all ripped up. But other than that, I felt good looking in halfway through the race. Felt good on the hills, coming down the hills. It was a really hilly course. It was like up and down. You finish one hill, you're up to the next hill. You go down that hill, you go up to right back into another hill. I've come across the finish line and looking at my time, which surprised me, finishing 30 minutes and 13 seconds, which knocked off about 30 seconds from my last race. But just crossing that finish line and knowing that I'm going to nationals, it's a feeling that like I never felt before. Felt like you know, everyone was there. I felt like I made my parents proud, my coach, my team. Unfortunately, the boys as a team didn't make it. Which sucks because we had a rookie team. Everyone on the boys team were rookies. They had no prior running background coming into this year. But it was a season that I will probably never forget as a rookie. It's just crazy to think that a group of people who are inexperienced running at university really put their heart out there and we made the purple and gold proud. You know, we were proud. So I'll definitely be running for the boys team. That's my goal at nationals. I'm going to be running for them. But yeah, just getting there and finally reaching the highest level you can reach in university and college is nationals. And reaching there this year as a rookie is definitely something that hopefully inspires other rookies coming in or people recruiting. We can use this as an example to bring in extraordinary athletes, hopefully, to this campus.
For sure. Yeah, I think it's a testament to the program, to what Coach Corey has done. foundation is strong and you guys have continued to push that forward. So yeah, big congrats again for making it.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. And going off of Corey, that guy is an unbelievable coach. Mm-hmm. He can easily transform anyone into a runner. He says it when he's recruiting people. People just laugh it off, but it's true. I've seen people coming out this year as a rookies, as I say, with no prior running experience, and they're out there getting PBs every race. And this, he just knows how to generate runners, and it's like an art watching. And it's so big ups to Coach Corey, big ups to the girls team, big ups to the guys team. We got one last race, and we're just gonna go out there and give it all we got.
Mm-hmm. When's the last race?
Nationals is on November 13th in Calgary at St. Mary's University. We leave on the 11th. So it's going to be cold. It's going to be snowy. It's going to end up with frostbites. But once that gun goes off, I ain't worried about placement or timing. I'm worried about getting out of the cold, cross the finish line, and building on for next season. I think that's everyone's goal at Nationals, is getting out of the cold.
Yeah, that Calgary cold is no joke. I know that for sure.
No. It's I think they someone checked. There was like -6 like a couple days ago, and it's snowing. So it's got 2 more weeks to ramp up its extreme weather. So, but yeah, it's gonna be interesting. It's gonna be fun. And I'm going out there to represent Laurier, so hopefully come back with pride and
a medal. We want medals.
you can tell that to the girls team, but for me, it's gonna be difficult for me. It's gonna be difficult.
Anything is possible. Anything is possible.
That is true.
Anything is possible.
That is true. We can go out there. We can shock the world. But I'm just going out there to have fun, just to enjoy the moment.
For sure. Yeah, man. You made it that far, you know?
Yeah.
I know you'll do your best. And then, you know, what happens, happens. So.
Yep.
It's good to see. And then.
That pretty much wraps up Brantford news. Mm-hmm. Brantford's sports. Jump into this week. We have another exciting week, like usual, of NBA. We're seeing teams really put the foot on the gas here. We got a lot of good teams out there. We've got a lot of shockers, like Washington. They are 5-1 somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they just got a lot of solid average players around Beal.
Yeah.
This team really looks good in the East. So does Chicago. So does New York. RJ just dropped a career high 35 against New Orleans last night. And we got surprising teams coming up in the East. It's looking interesting.
The Hornets look real good. I was surprised to see how, like, I knew the Hornets were going to be good this season, but I'm surprised how easy and effortless, you know, that it looks. Miles Bridges is playing the best basketball he's played. You know, Oubre's contributing a lot more now. LaMelo is LaMelo, so I'm not surprised by anything he does. And then PJ Washington had a great game yesterday, dropped 17 points against Portland. So the East is very competitive right now, and it's generating a lot of good basketball. Miami looks great. The Lowry. Remember how I told you about Lowry, bro?
I know. I this wrecking bite. I can bite my tongue here.
The Lowry effect is strong and with Miami. I'm a little worried about Trey, just because of this whole rule change thing. Not getting his best. I know it's still early, but just not getting his best performances, you know?
Yeah. It's impacting a lot of good scorers. Mm-hmm. Harden especially. He's really getting frustrated with the rule change, but he's slowly picking up. Last night, he dropped his first triple double in three quarters. At the end of third, he had like 18, 10, and 12. So he's slowly getting back into there. But yeah, it's I love the rule change. This is where elite scorers will be elite scorers. This is no more easy points at the line. So it's really going to challenge, you know, who's really the best scorer here. There was glimpses of, you know, is Harden overrated with the new rule change? Is he, are we really seeing the true Harden with this new rule change, or is it, was he just getting the points because the rule before of leading in and creating generating contact at the line, at the free throw line, I mean, 3-point line. So it was worrying me for a bit. I'm like, you know, it's Harden's not living up to his expectations, but knowing Harden, he's an elite scorer. A guy who averaged like 35 in a season. He's going to adapt and change it, but it's exciting to see this new rule change is really affecting players, and it's giving them a challenge, and it's giving that new perspective on basketball, which I like.
Yeah. I think it was definitely a change that positively affected the rest of the league. Just showing how we're going to see, like you said, the true scorers of the game, really showcase their ability and not try to manipulate the rules. I don't want to say there's anything wrong with manipulating it. It's just obviously call the fouls that are actual fouls, right? Don't bail people out just because of a certain movement they do and stuff like that. I think this is going to be better for the game in the long run. So I'm happy to see it. And I got to mention your Lakers because...
Have you finally come around?
No, I'm still skeptical. Melo's been playing a great, amazing.
Yes, he has.
He's been doing a lot of the offensive work that's been helping out the big three. But I still don't think their performances are great. You know what I mean? Like how they're playing isn't worrying me at all, you know? Like they're beating teams they should beat. Like they just beat Houston last night. They beat Cleveland, but the performances, the way they're playing, isn't convincing me.
Yeah, it's their squeak buys. I know we were up big at half against Houston. At the end of the game, they were only lost by 10. And the Cleveland game was neck and neck for the whole game. We squeaked by Cleveland, which we shouldn't have. Those are the games where teams that are rebuilding and they have a young core is where we should just run over them. I expect those type of games against bigger teams like Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Golden State, Denver. Those are the games where I expect close games for the Lakers. Not Cleveland, not Houston. But yeah, Melo off the bench is really creating scoring opportunities, and he's getting us the points. So, but as I said it before, and I'll say it again, just give it time. Let him get the chemistry going, and you'll see him lifting the chip at the end of the season. So I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of time. I know they still have some injuries as well. Talen, Horan Tucker, and Kendrick Nunn, we need to see them in the rotation. So there's a lot going on. But I am very happy with the basketball we've seen over the last few weeks.
Yep.
The Warriors, just wanted to touch on them and how well they've been playing. Draymond's been a lot more aggressive offensively, which I think is necessary. I always did think he could score a little bit more just because of how he can get those quick, easy, you know, 6 points just off of like fake handoffs to Steph and stuff like that. I think it helps keep their offense flowing as well. And then the role players are really stepping up for Golden State. So it's really nice to see Golden State basketball like fully functioning. And then once Klay comes back, you know, then we'll really see what they're made of.
Yeah. A big guy that stepped in for to fill Klay's shoes is Jordan Poole, and he's done a fantastic job stepping in and filling that role for Klay Thompson. Obviously, he's not the deadliest shooter as Klay, but he's still generating points. He's still generating the energy on both sides of the ball. So, yeah, Golden State, I just think they just have one of those organizations where it doesn't really matter what players are on the court. They just have that ability to just compete against any team. Mm-hmm. You saw that, you know, Baron Davis, the upset when they were the 8th seed. And I think that really just wraps, you know, sums up Golden State in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter where they're at with the placement. They're always a team that you got to really watch and a team that's full of surprises. So I just say, am I surprised that they're performing well? No, they have Curry. And they have assets around them, but at the same time, I am surprised that which players stepped up. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect, you know, I thought Wiggins would have stepped up bigger this year. James Wiseman, but it's the Damian Lees. It's the Jordan Pools that are really stepping up. So Golden State is just a fun team to watch. I can watch them play anytime. So yeah, I'm surprised, but I'm not surprised at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think once the playoffs starts, they'll definitely be one of the teams to watch in the West. And then I just wanted to highlight the Clippers and how terrible.
Yeah. Opposite ends of the spectrum.
The games have not been enjoyable. I know they're without Kawhi, but it really shows how important Kawhi is to their team. Paul George has been playing well. He is averaging the points. He is, you know, the production is there. It's just the Clippers, I don't know, man. I feel like they're in purgatory. I just feel like they are they're not destined for greatness.
No. When you have a guy like Kawhi going out making rap albums when he's injured, it's your question, is he really focused on basketball or is you focused on something else? He's one of those characters where you just don't know what's gonna happen with him. So it's that team right now is full of shambles. Ty Lue needs to get a grip on the players, and really, you know, do something here. If that's bring in another player, bring in someone else to fill Kawhi until he's back. Mm-hmm. Then do it. There's a lot of players out there that can generate the points. Grabbing a Gordon Hayward from Charlotte and bring him into LA to help Paul George, then do it. Bring in, you know, because Oubre's, as you said, Oubre's playing well. He's playing that small forward power forward position. So yeah, I think right now Clippers, they are missing Kawhi. You can see it, but they need to bring in someone to fill the shoes, like immediately, because yeah. Kawhi ain't gonna be coming back soon.
Yeah, you know, like you said, Ty Lue is a good coach. His in-game adjustments are really, they're really well done. But without Kawhi, I just don't see them. Like, are they a playoff team to you?
The Clippers? When they have Kawhi, they're a playoff team, easily.
For sure. But without Kawhi, sorry. Without Kawhi.
No, I don't think Paul George is at his level where he was when he was in with Indiana, with the Pacers, where he could bring them to the playoffs by himself. I think he regressed once he went to OKC. Obviously, you know, he was an MVP candidate when he went to OKC 1 year. But he just kind of regressed from Indiana to LA. So I don't think he has the ability anymore to bring a team and carry the lift, carry the weight on his shoulders to playoffs. So no, the Kawhi Clippers are not a playoff team.
So who do you think would replace them in the standings?
In the West?
Yeah.
Now, like, where, like, particular in the standings? Like, are we putting him, like, a top five? We're putting or just someone, like, with Kawhi, they're easily, you could say, a top three, top five team in the West.
Yeah. Do you think Golden State replaces them as that, like, top four, top five team? Because you have your Utah, you have Denver, you have the Lakers, and then you could put Golden State in there right there.
Oh, easily. Yeah, for sure. For sure. I said this before in past episodes, the Kings, I know 3-2 right now. Or they're
3-3.
So they played yesterday, they lost. Mm-hmm. They're 500 right now. But they're playing good basketball. Buddy Hield is doing what he does. He's a spot-up shooter. Fox is leading the team. Mm-hmm. Tyrese Halliburton is a solid second-year player. Rashawn Holmes is an underrated center. Harrison Barnes is playing his best basketball so far in his career. So and Davion Mitchell looks like he's going to be a frustrating player to play against in this league. They have the assets there to generate a push for the playoffs. I just want to see how Luke Walton can really keep this team for another 70-something games. So, yeah, I think the Kings could replace the Clippers, not in the top five, but in that playoff position.
Really? You think the Kings are better than Minnesota?
That one's tough there. I mean, Minnesota has their mini big three with Ant and Russell and Towns. If I put them in a best of seven games, I see the Kings coming on top in six.
Wow. Wow, that's a bold prediction. Because I know Davion Mitchell can bother D'Angelo defensively. But because he is a rookie, I think the experience, it'd be a very fun series to watch, actually. It'd be fun to watch. Yeah, the West has a lot of deciding factors. I think near the 5, 6, 7, 8, that's where things get interesting, because, you know, there's Minnesota, there's Sacramento, there's Memphis, there's Phoenix. So as the games start to come and, you know, the standings started to really, like, take shape, I think looking out for those last four spots will be interesting.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the play-in tournaments here.
Mm-hmm.
I do see Sacramento getting in that play-in. I do see Minnesota getting in the play-in. As much as it will be, I think Phoenix will be in the play-in.
Probably, yeah.
And then Philly in the last spot. I don't want to see Memphis. I think Memphis is going to be that sneaking into the top five. If not, a solid six, they're going to be automatically clinched. But I think the other spot's going to go to Portland in the play-in tournament.
Yeah. Yeah, especially Dame. Dame needs to pick up form as well. He struggled a little bit. I know for a player like Dame, this is nothing, but for them to make that strong push and to avoid the play-in, he needs to have another great season.
It's Dame. Dame will always have a season That's good, but it's going to end up somehow being overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
But Portland, obviously, they're going to make playoffs. They're definitely going to move on from the play-in tournament. It's just that who's going to move on from Sacramento, Minnesota, and Phoenix?
Yeah. Yeah, the season has to show us a lot more. Because I know Phoenix don't need to, you know, pick up speed. So we'll see.
Yeah, but that's all that's – I'm saying all that with – that's with Clippers without Kawhi.
Yeah.
Obviously, when they get back in, one of those teams I mentioned will be missing the playoffs. And with the Clippers in, with the healthy Clippers, then I think Minnesota misses out and they get the 11th. But the West is exciting. The East is exciting. So it's going to be fun year of basketball to watch. It's going to be fun playoffs. We're going to see a lot of upsets, a lot of shockers. So I'm looking forward to the rest of the season.
Definitely. It's a lot more to see.
Yes, and speaking of a lot more to see, we're seeing a lot of positive results for the Gunners in London, in England. Sitting a solid six right now, but we are tied with Man United and West Ham. No, West Ham just won yesterday, so we're tied with Man United for fifth. After a slow start, starting on the bottom of the table, we've picked up form, and we haven't looked back, and it's exciting, Arsenal, the watch. It's exciting to be a fan now. And this team is really looking solid. I think they really got form, especially with Smith Rowe, with Ramsdale, with save of the season against Leicester game. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
One word to describe Arsenal's play right now is unbelievable.
I like where things are going. Personally, I did not think we were going to beat Leicester as simply as we did.
Oh, come on.
Bro, it was an early game. I did not expect. Because it was funny when I – because the game started at 7:30. And I was like, okay, I'm not waking up early to watch Arsenal, you know, make me cry on a Saturday morning. I don't need that type of early pain in my life. So let me avoid that, right? So anyways, I end up waking up at 8:00. And I check my notifications and I see, you know, the two soccer balls, right? And I'm like, so I know someone scored. And then I see Gabriel scores. And he scores early in like the 4th minute. I'm like, oh. And then I see Smith Rowe scored in like the 12th minute. I'm like, oh, we're winning. So naturally, you know, I grab the laptop, I head over to the zone, I open up the game, and I'm seeing we're bombarding these guys, like we're dominating the game. I'm like, whoa, Arsenal came to play today. And that's the big thing when I think about Arsenal is like, which Arsenal team are we going to get? You know, with Arteta, it's so inconsistent. We'll play amazing, like how we did at Spurs. And then we'll go to Brighton and we won't do anything. So I just never really know what Arsenal team I'm going to see. But the recent results have showed me a more consistent team. I think he finally found his starting 11 that works. We're still yet to face a big, you know, top six team because Spurs are shit and they don't count.
yes, they don't count.
So I know we have Liverpool after the Watford game that we have next week. So that will be a big test to see, you know, where we're at. And I think it's coming at a good time too. You know, we're at a high. We haven't lost in what, six or seven?
Yep.
So after we beat Watford, because we'll beat them. Liverpool's I think they're the ideal team, ideal test to see where we really are.
Yeah. I can proudly say every Arsenal game I tune into is the same. I'm going to expect the same team now. We are in consistent form.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, you know, beat Liverpool and then go back and get hammered by Norwich 3-0. It's no more. It's no more playing well against top teams and playing horrible against bottom teams. It's consistent throughout. And then we had a shaky game against Crystal Palace, which we barely scraped a point out of.
Mm-hmm.
But then we turned it around right there, and we beat Villa 3-1, came around, moved on in the Carabao Cup. And then we came around again and shut out Leicester.
Mm-hmm.
We surprisingly ain't performing well. They're sitting 10th right now. You know, Leicester's usually a team that can is consistently a top six, top seven. But at this point, I don't really care. Anything Arsenal goes up against, you're an enemy. So Watford hopefully ain't a challenge for us.
Yeah.
Knock on wood there, but with the form we're playing now, and I hope he keeps the same 11 throughout and consistent. But yeah, I mean, I was up Saturday, obviously had to get up early to catch the bus. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm gonna give some credit to Arsenal of you know, me making nationals, you know, put me in a good mood there on the bus there. if they would have lost, it would have been a different story. Maybe I'd be sitting here today. Season would have been over for me, but you know, that's the part of being a Gunner, you know. They help you in life situations. You win a game, you're ecstatic. You lose a game, you're in the shower playing some sad music with cold water. So it's
the years
it's,
of
the it's, years it, of mental, yes. yes, it's a mental stability over the years.
Yeah, I think especially like our age group as well. We kind of got, you know, the latter end of Wenger's, you know, dominance. But just seeing how Arsene Wenger built Arsenal to be the team that it is today, a lot of credit has to be shown to Wenger Ball, to what, you know, to the style and culture he cultivated at Arsenal.
Yeah, you know, without Wagner being the coach, I would have never been an Arsenal fan.
Mm-hmm.
He just generated, brought in players that fit right away. There's no needing to inspire some growth. They fit in right away. They helped out right away. Bringing in Alexis Sanchez was one of the biggest signings for Arsenal in mm-hmm. history. He helped right away from Barcelona. He came over and just succeeded. Bringing in other players like Bellerin, again, from Barca, I think. Just players that just came in and they just performed right away. Which it was just beautiful to watch in their possession game, his possession tactic. Moving the ball from one box to another box in a matter of seconds. It was like watching art on my screen. So
yeah, that's the exact way I describe it. It was art. He brought an art form to football. Even early on in the years where he had, you know, his French team, the Invincible team, with like the Vieiras, the Robert Perez, the Gilberto Silva, the Bergkamp, of course, Thierry Henry.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was waiting for the King to get in there. I was waiting for him.
The King. There was so much fluidity in the team. And the way we used to dominate teams, that's the main thing for me. Like, we had that. When people came to Highbury, the fear factor Highbury had, I missed that. Like, you know, when you were coming to play Arsenal, you had to be on job or else you were going to get dominated possession-wise, mentally. So it was, I really missed that part of Arsenal because, again, I like knowing, okay, when teams come to the Emirates, like, you're going to lose. You're not going to beat us. It's not going to be, unless you're, you know, like a top four team, it's not really going to be a challenge. But now, you know, the Norwiches of the world, the Brentfords, can come with confidence. Like, oh, it's just Arsenal. And I'm like, what do you mean it's just Arsenal? Like, we need that fear factor back.
I agree. I'm hoping this is the end of the rebuild. I'm hoping this is pushing towards trophies. I don't even know the last time I've seen Arsenal lift a trophy. I think it was FA Cup, and I'm tired of lifting the FA Cup.
It doesn't count for me anymore, bro.
No, I'm tired. I'm tired of lifting the FA Cup. I'm tired of lifting the Community Shield. I know. I want us to lift the Prem. I want us to lift the Champions League, the Europa League. Mm-hmm. Those are the trophies where Arsenal needs to start getting into. Obviously, this year we're not going to lift any of those. Mm-hmm. We still have EPL to chase, but the trophies that we need to get excited for, like the Carabao Cup and the Super Cup, it's sad to say, but it's where we're at now. And Arsenal right now is, we're young, we have a young midfield, but we know how to play. So I'm slowly seeing a super team in the making. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If Odegaard gets in the form and, you know, Smith Rowe turns into someone who we need, that, you know, Bergkamp or that, mm-hmm. You know, Pires, you know, Saka could be that Pires on the wing. Odegaard or Smith Rowe can be that. Bergkamp, and obviously right now we don't have, Thierry Henry, you can run through. I'm slowly seeing the resemblance from the Invincibles to now. I can see players who, you know, recreate their game after the Arsenal legends. So it's exciting to see.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens in the future. Obviously big games coming up with, you know, Liverpool and Man United in a couple games. So, but yeah, bringing that fear factor back to Emirates is what we need. We've already conquered that with one team, with Tottenham, simply. London's always red. Mm-hmm. And I'm just waiting to conquer that with another big team like Chelsea.
Yeah.
That's a team, if we can take down a team like that. Right now, because right now they're sitting at the top of the table. But the team that's favored to win this year is Liverpool. Obviously, with the slip-up that Man City had against Crystal Palace on the weekend, they obviously dropped points, but Liverpool with Salah just looks unbeatable until they come to the Emirates. So, we'll see. We'll see. But yeah. Yes, I agree. We need that fear factor back in Arsenal.
Yeah, I agree. I think with there's definitely a system in place at Arsenal right now. Like, Arteta knows what he wants to do, how he wants to play. I just feel like there's a few key pieces missing. For example, we need another winger, you know, to support Saka. I think Smith Rowe as a 10 is perfect. You know, he does his job, carries the ball really well, can create plays. And those two are still so young, right? So it's okay to have competition within the team. You know how, like, City have so much competition. We shouldn't have to rely on Smith Rowe and Saka playing every game when they're only, you know, 21-20. They have so much time. So adding in, you know, more wingers to, one, for competition, but also add to the depth and to the quality of our team is much needed. And then the striker, you know, Aubameyang, he's the guy, but, you know, he's on his way out. And with the way we play, I enjoy how Arteta brought in young guys from early, even with the signings he made, right? With like Odegaard and Ben White and Lokonga. I like that there's something being built, you know. Will it resemble the Invincibles? I mean, I doubt it.
Yeah, it's gonna be hard to resemble that, but
yeah, that would be nice. But like, we do have good players, you know. There's quality in the team, so it's something to be excited about. But yes, Chelsea, I think Chelsea look really scary. I actually think they're going to win the league. I know it's early still, 10 games in, but their team is so consistent. It's so consistent. And they have a big enough team to where they can get results every game. I feel like with Liverpool, although Liverpool are playing amazing, it is more of a Salah has to play really well. And then the whole team plays well. You know what I mean? Don't get me wrong. They're still a dominant team. And I know it's a lot more than Salah. But just with how well Salah's been playing, I feel like he does. There may be like a one or two injury away from, you know, not being as dominant as they are. So, yeah.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. I know there's a teams fighting for that top four. Mm-hmm. Or so you can say like top four right now. You could put Chelsea, you could put Man City, you could put United, you could put Arsenal there. Even West Ham, surprisingly. They're playing phenomenal.
Yeah.
But I know I don't like talking about them, you know, their rival team, but big news happened today for Tottenham. They did fire Nuno, and they did bring in Antonio Conte. He's landed in London.
They don't deserve him.
He worked on them being an excellent coach. I know you said you wanted him in Arsenal.
I did.
and he's a coach where he can make an immediate impact in 1 year. You saw it with Chelsea. You saw with Inter. He doesn't need multiple seasons to be great. He only needs one. So we'll see what happens. We'll see. Obviously, I wish the worst for Tottenham always. But now that they really got a good coach behind them, a good solid manager, we'll see if the results change. It's going to be scary, though, knowing that Conte is working with the blue and white. But I wish I saw him in the Emirates. I mean, we'll see him in the Emirates eventually, but just on the opposite side. But it was a shocker for me knowing that one of the greatest managers that football's ever seen is joining one of our biggest rival as an Arsenal fan.
Just wasting his time. Because Conte is very, very, like, he's a very demanding coach, right? So I feel like he's not afraid to say, okay, look, I'm going to sell Harry Kane and I'm going to redo this whole team. I don't think he's afraid to do that. I know that's probably been a topic of discussion because we know how he likes to play with his 3-5-2 or his 3-4-3. And if you don't fit that system, Conte will sell you. He'll sell you and he'll get the players he needs to play that. So I know from seeing the reports, it is looking like a long-term deal. So I'm expecting, you know, three to 5 years. It's going to be a project. And even though Spurs are cursed, Conte is the type of person who can lift that curse. So,
oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, good for them. But games are going to be a lot more interesting. The North London Derby is going to be a lot more interesting.
Yeah,
Conte.
Yeah, but I have faith in Arteta. He's really showing consistency. Which is one of the biggest things Arsenal needs right now is consistency. So we never know. We might just say Arteta in from now on. We don't need Arteta out. Right now, he's playing. He's performing. He's performing. It is early, but right now he's performing. Like, he's a manager that can really inspire. So I was kind of skeptical with him coming in. Arsenal. I know that he was a former player. He knows the system works. He knows everything in the ins and outs of Emirates. But I think just getting that 1 year under his belt really helped. I think now he really understands his, you know, his game plan, his tactics are there. He's working on it every day. But I think he just needed that 1 year under his belt.
Yeah, I agree. But
overall, the future for Arsenal is looking very, very, I can see success in their future, which is exciting as a fan. And watching him play right now is exciting to see. And the young players they got and finally growing them into superstars. You know, not wasting talent like we used to do before.
Yeah.
Bringing people in and then you just ruin their career. So,
yeah.
We're generating youth, we're generating future prospects. So, it's exciting. It's exciting. Yeah. I know Arteta likes it.
It's heading in the right direction.
Yeah.
It'll take some time. You know, I still don't know if Arteta's that guy, but. There's a good enough foundation to where, you know, if Arteta isn't that guy, someone can come in and, you know, fix it up, and it shouldn't take too long for Arsenal to get back up there.
Yeah. He likes his young players. He likes bringing in, you know, we brought in Lukanga, Nuno, I think who else we brought in? I think it's what's his name? Starts with the B, striker.
Balogun?
Yeah, that guy. That's him. He likes his youth. Which is like, I'm on the fence with that. It's like, I get you like youth players and you want to grow and have a solid foundation in the future, but you got to switch back close to the way anyways, is bringing in players now who are ready to play now and not later.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get players like that who could play now, then we're going to be looking like we're business. But overall, future's bright for Arsenal, and I'm excited for it. Because we have such a rich history.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want – and I know this from, like, 2015 to 2020. I know that changed from Champions League to – no league is going to be a part of our history.
Yeah.
But that's what happens in every club. You're going to have some down years where you just sell and rebuild and then you start buying. And right now I think Arsenal's done selling. I think right now we're in the market of buying. We need to buy players and push for spots here. This is the time. Mm-hmm. Our young players that we need are already developing. So we need to buy some players in their prime, but also who can teach and then generate knowledge to our youth.
Yeah, I like how you said how we're not really looking to sell. Like, we're only really going to sell, you know, the Deadwood, you know, the Kolasinacs, you know, Lacazette for next season. Pepe might have to go too. So just the last, you know, Deadwood at the club, that can definitely go. But yeah, since the majority of our team is young, we have a lot to hold on to. So those are the positives there. This is the part of our history that's, you know, the downside after being, you know, so relevant for so long. And I think people forget how bad Liverpool were before Klopp came. Like, Liverpool were horrible. They were Europa League every year. They were just very average. And they got the right manager to change it around. And I do think it starts from the manager. Because a manager that's aware will make the right signings for the style of play he wants to play. So, you know, Arteta, everyone he's brought in is someone who should fit the system he wants to play. So that's why it will take some time to see if it's actually going to work. So it's a big season for him. I think it's more important for how we perform and where we finish to save his job and to see if he can you know, push forward for, you know, the next few years. Or he'll just get replaced next season, I think, if we're not really progressing the way we should be.
Yep. Hopefully not, though, but...
Yeah.
Right now, I'm happy with his performances. I'm happy with what he's doing with Arsenal, so... But I think that, you know, I can talk Arsenal all day, hours and hours. But we are in time crunch here. So we're going to jump over to what we do every podcast, every episode. The ending question generates a lot of debates and discussion here. But as we're both Arsenal fans, I think we know the answer to who is the greatest English Premier League player of all time. It's simple. It's in the books. The man, the myth, the legend, the king, the French king, Thierry Henry, is hands down the greatest player the Premier League's ever seen. I know with this ending questions, we have a lot of opposite answers, but this week we're going to finally come together and decide that it's Thierry Henry. I know there's close calls. You know, you can say Rooney. You had a great career for Man United. There's Scholes. You know, there's so many great players who come in the Prem, but Thierry is who you think of when you think of the Premier League, you think of Thierry Henry.
Yeah, man. I you know, there's been a lot of greats to come through the Prem, but I just think for everything Thierry accomplished, for everything he did for that one team, you have to give it to Thierry. He's how he also, you know, he came from Monaco? No, he came from Juventus. And completely transformed the game with his play. And there's just really no debate for me.
You know, I agree.
There's like, no debate. I get Ronaldo. I do get it. But his prime was in Real Madrid. His
100%. Was in Real Madrid.
100%. And then I get the Sergio Aguero. I get that. But I just think as a player, Thierry Henry did more and achieved just as much as Aguero.
I think the closest you can say to Henry's, you know, you have your Steven Gerrard's, you have your, obviously you have Rooney.
Yeah.
A lot of people might say Rooney with United. You know, he grew up in United. I mean, he came from Everton, but his prime was Man United. But Thierry Runner, he did everything you could in the Premier League. He accomplished everything. You're not going to see teams ever going invincible again. I don't think so. And he was the leader of that. He was the biggest star on that team. Obviously, he had a supporting cast, but Thierry Henry was just the guy at that time. You know, he has the goals. He has the awards. He has the Champions League. He has the Premier League. What else can you ask for a player in the Prem? There's records and records he's held, and there's no debate. I don't think this anyone can debate that Henry is the greatest to ever step foot on a Premier League pitch. But we know people have different opinions, as we do, as I said, or as we encourage. You know, I want people to reach out and give us separate, you know, different opinions. But with this one, I don't want to hear anything from you guys. It's Henry. If you guys get a message us, it's Thierry Henry. That's it. If I get a message saying it's someone else, I ain't opening it. I ain't going to give you acknowledgement. it's Henry, like, forever and ever.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone else is gonna match what he's done. You know, coming to come from a different league and come to the Prem and your prime, to get in your prime at the Prem, coming from a different league is difficult. A lot of people don't adapt very well to the Prem. So players like that who've come into the Premier League and they've shot into the prime, is they're up there, you know, Rooney, Gerrard, Henry, Ferdinand. The list goes on and on and on, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's Thierry. No debate, as you said, no debate at all. One, two words, Thierry. Simple.
Yeah. You guys are welcome to drop some other names in the comments, but if it doesn't start with a T,
I don't bring it.
I'm not gonna read it. So
yeah, maybe, you know, they might trick us and they might, you know, open it up. It says Theo Walcott, but hey, it's an Arsenal player. It's an Arsenal player. I'll take it, but it's the wrong TH we're looking for here. It's Thierry.
Yes, it's there.
I think that pretty much concludes episode 5. As we said before, don't hesitate to reach out. Give us a run for our money with these debates here. Next week on episode 6, stay tuned to my Instagram at Jack Rice and Michael's Instagram.
Plug it in for you there. _ OKA. Two A's.
Yeah. We'll be posting questions, asking people to give us questions to be featured on next week's episode. We're going to be answering a lot of sports topics. Hopefully that generates some debate here, but give us some questions and we'll answer them on this next week's week 6. We'll do a little fan interaction here, or viewers interaction, and that's a little sneak peek of next week's episodes of week 6 on the Sports Bible.
Yes, sir. This concludes episode 5, and we will see you next week for episode 6.
Yes, sir. Take care, everyone.
Take care.